Today we're going to be dealing with Pastor Caleb. Thankfully, I don't think I have any good Pastor Caleb stories. I can never really intensely trace up any Caleb in my house. Did I tell you about the onion soup channel? The closest I got to really having an issue, a Pastor Caleb issue, was when I was learning. I think we were actually dealing with Pastor Caleb. We were toward the end of last year by a Benarsh, and my wife asked me to make some sort of onion something soup. Always a bad idea. I never asked my husband to make soup or anything. So I'm moving around the apartment and getting the pot from here and the ladle from here and the cutting board and the knife from here and there. I'm pretty sure I know what I'm doing. And I'm cutting up the onion, and I'm taking the pot, and I'm turning the pot on, and the low burner. And then I realized that I'd used a carved knife on the onion, on a plastic cutting board, in a milk pot, anything Yomo. I'm like, oh my God, this is 18 team on right now. I don't know what to do, and I called her Benarsh. And I said, Benarsh, I have a very interesting shiloh for you. He said, all right, let me hear it. And I walked him through exactly what I had done. And he said, actually, this is a fantastic test question. It's so complicated. It's covering literally every single piece that we learned. This is great. This is so much fun. Let's walk through it. And he took me through step by step. We should have written it down. He took me through step by step. But it was double fire, therefore that. It was this type of kli, and this type of fire, blah, blah, blah. And we walked through the entire shiloh. End of the day, I think everything was fine. Nothing needed to be cautioned. But that was my closest experience to messing things up. I think right after we got married, like a month in or something, one of us tripped up a cereal spoon, and then I hadn't really done anything yet. So I think we didn't know which one it was. They'd already gotten put back into the dishwasher. So I called up the guy who had given me custom classes, one of the guys back in NYU, and I explained the situation. And he said, "Oh, once you should not have already washing the thing, that you put it back in the silverware drawer. But once you did, everything's okay. But shouldn't have done that." Oh, my bad. Apparently it happens all the time. Kosher pigeons, you find the spoon on the wrong side of the sink. You open up the dishwasher and there's a knife that doesn't belong there. You are totally absent-minded and you use the wrong pot with the wrong type of soup. It can definitely happen pretty often. If you've gotten relatively lucky so far. Or we just haven't done it. But the important thing, how are you not table? The other big time this comes up is Pesach. Often nowadays, often nowadays people have two kitchens. They have the Pesach kitchen and the regular kitchen. They don't need to kosher so much. It definitely used to be much more the standard a little bit back in the day. And even now, there's some things which you kosher and use back and forth, Pesach and not Pesach. So all the things that we're going to be saying do not apply to Pesach. There's something called Chumrah de Pesach, which bumps everything up when getting ready for Pesach to a whole new level. Why would Chumrah de Pesach be a thing? Well, everything we're dealing with is there. Right? The Basar, the Chalav, and Treif, it's all there. Right?
Great point.
That's correct. What if you're buying a kli from a guy? And they eat bacon and pork and all the other yummy things, lobster. That's all straight. That's a good point. But it, you might have Hesher Kalim during the year for straight trefus, and then they're both going to be there, right? So why come with the Pesach? So what does Bal Yerah Bal Yemateh tell you? Bal Yerah Bal Yemateh obviously only applies during Pesach, right? But what does that tell you? I think one of the first Tosfos in Tosfos
Tzav. Mm-hmm.
No, that's just don't have it around. Blios, this is funny. Blios are not an issue on Pesach. If you have chametz blios in the kli, it doesn't mess up the kli at all. Sometimes people actually make this mistake when selling stuff, when selling kalim. It's a relatively new chumrah that they said that people write into the shtar that they're also selling the blios in the pot, which is totally ridiculous, totally not a thing, not necessary. But if you're a rookie, you're a rookie rabbi and you're deciding to blaze your own trail and write up your own shtar, and you might think, oh, it's better to just sell the entire kli. I'll sell the kli to the guy, the blios and everything. No, we should just sell the entire kli, and then after Pesach, I'll buy it back. Why is that a terrible idea?
I
Yeah, exactly. He's just someone now the guy owns all your Caleb in your house. And when you bind that guy to break off, so the last Caleb issue is terrible. So don't do that. Big mistake. It's totally unnecessary. You don't need to sell either. You don't even need to sell the Bleos, so it doesn't need to be written in. The Bleos are not a problem on Pesach. If you want to use the Kli, as opposed to just putting in like a closet somewhere, if you want to use the Kli, then it's definitely a problem. And that's why you would be being mashed. So a few things about Pesach. Number one, what's the punishment for Paris? Sorry. Okay. The punishment for chametz on Pesach is chametz. That's a pretty severe punishment. It's a pretty big deal. So that's number one. The Torah is like throwing flesh and light at you. This is a big problem. Avoid this like the plague. One reason you might bump up the preparation to make sure you're really getting rid of everything because you want to avoid the chametz of chametz. Number two, the fact that the Torah put in Mitzvah of Bal Yigah, Bal Yematzeh on Pesach, one way of presenting that Mitzvah is we want to be so confident that you're not going to come to eat or interact with getting out from chametz on Pesach itself. We'll even tell you to get it out of your house. That's an idea of a siyag de'oraisa. I think Rebbe Weiss likes to talk about this. Siyag de'oraisa you might also have in certain yichud scenarios or negiyah scenarios, if you hope that negiyah is a de'oraisa. So there are different times where the Torah could set up a siyag de'oraisa. Bal Yigah, Bal Yematzeh might be an example of that. Again, so we're telling you, stay far, far away from Pesach, from chametz over the course of Pesach. Then Chazal seems to have taken their cue from Bal Yigah, Bal Yematzeh, from the Torah itself, and they created the mitzvah of biur. And not only do you have Bal Yigah, Bal Yematzeh, you make sure it's not around, you should burn everything that's actually in your house, whether that's tashbisa or whether that's considered derabanan. It's a huge machlokas in the very beginning of stuff, about the first 10 daf or something. So we have a lot of signs that the Torah is really not comfortable with us having chametz around, and Chumrat the Pesach is one more iteration, one more expression of that idea. So we're not going to be talking about Pesach right now. Read the halacha or ask your local Orthodox rabbi when that time comes if you want to deal with that stuff. But Baal often is going to be taking the poem that we're saying out now and bumping them up in terms of Chumrat by one level or something. Okay. So the Shulchan Aruch is Kuf Chof Aleph. The Dinim of Hashem Kalim show up both in Yoreh Deah and in Orach Chaim. Yoreh Deah, obviously, when you're dealing with Trei Kalim, and Orach Chaim, in the Pesach, Halachos and the Pesach Simanim, talking about Hashem Kalim, there are differences, like we just spoke about, but those are like the two areas where you're going to be looking from. There is a little bit of overlap back and forth. Okay, so we're going to be focusing mainly on the Yoreh Deah stuff. If you buy used Kalim from a guy, two things you need to do. Number one, Tevilah and Hashem. In that order? Hopefully, yeah. Probably not. Like we mentioned before, we're going to talk about it again. Machlokas, Russian Rashba, or Raven Rashba. We'll get there. But two things you have to make sure you take care of. First, you want to be Machir. Second, you want to be Tovel. Both of these mitzvot come from the exact same Sukkot in the Torah. Right after the war with Midian, Bnei Israel got a bunch of Kalim, and Moshe told them, that you need to take those kalim, six different types of metal, and you need that gives us the source for shibolo kafolko, any kalim which are ta'aviru ba'esh, any kalim which are used with esh, ta'aviru ba'esh with the hair, anything used in mayim should be soaked or not roasted, should be cooked. Boiled in water, and some things just need to be washed out. So that one little parsha gives us both of these mitzvos. So right there, we see that there are three different levels. Anything used with cold water is very simple to be masher. All you need to do is scrub it, rinse it in cold water. What that does is that removes tam from the outside of the kli. If a kli was used with hot water, like your pots that you use for noodles and your dishes that you use for chicken, liquidy chicken, things like that, then you need to dunk it in boiling water at the same temperature that it was used, and then wash it out. That's hagalah in boiling water. That essentially does is it draws tam out that was absorbed into the walls of the kli. Through the heat, the tam was absorbed inside the walls. So hagalah is removing the tam from inside the walls and bringing it out. That's number two. There are different levels of hagalah. Again, it's always going to depend on what you're using the kli with. Kibolo, kafolto, the way the taste was absorbed. So too, it's spit out. We have five different levels. Kli rishon al ha'esh. this is definitely going to be the highest level of heat. You get boiling water in a pot while it's still on fire. Then the second level, kli rishon, she'ino aleish, that same pot of water, you just take it off the stove, take it off the burner. It's still going to be incredibly hot, just you don't have a consistent heat source, which is adding more fuel, so it is going to start cooling down. Irui kli rishon is your kumkum, turn it on, boils in like 30 seconds, it's awesome. And then you pour a stream of boiling water onto something else that's called Irui Kli Rishon. A lot of figures in Shabbos as to whether it's Irui Kli Rishon, Irui Kli Sheni, how much is it actually in the Vashel, but it's kind of in between Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni. The fourth step is the Kli Sheni. Even though in general we assume that Kli Sheni ain't on the Vashel, you shouldn't really have to be Masher. Let's say you have a pot on the fire, pour it into a second pot, and you didn't realize you threw in some trace meat. And now this trace meat is cooking, in some sense. So we're not necessarily able to bring the rolls over. There is overlap, we can't necessarily bring the rolls over. What would the klipa even mean? Oh, it would cook the meat. The question is, so the main question, even by Irui already, is Irui hot enough to cause Belia? Even if it does cook, is it hot enough to cause Belia into Kalim? Is it hot enough to bring, even if it could cause Belia, can it cause taste to come out? So a lot of those are questions. If it's questions by Irui, for sure going to be questions by Kli Sheni. Generally, we hold not. Generally, we hold Kli Sheni is not enough, is not hot enough to get taste into the walls of a Kli, so you really shouldn't have a problem. But definitely when it comes to Pesach, generally the Mazmatin is Mekil. When it comes to Pesach, the Ramah is the Mahmir. Anything, a Kli which is used with trace, the Kli Sheni does need to be kashered. Technically, you could be mastered based on the level of heat that the trace is happening with. If you know that I only ever use, let's say, this spoon in a Irui Kli Sheni or a Kli Rishon Sheino Ala Eish, then technically you could kosher the spoon in the exact same way. You could boil up a kumkum and just pour the water from the kumkum onto the spoon, Irui Kli Rishon, even though it's not the highest level of heat, since that's how it's the same trace, Kibolo, so too I can kosher it that way, Kach Polto. I think you can understand practically, we always try to use the Kli Rishon Sha'al Ha'esh, the highest level for Hagalah. But there's always a chance, there's always concern that it was using the Kli Rishon and just forgot about it, didn't realize, weren't paying attention, so we'll always try to go for the highest level as possible. If you are 100% sure, check with your rabbi, I guess, but if you're 100% sure that it was only ever used Irui Kli Rishon, then technically you put kasher with Irui Kli Rishon, but always aim for the Kli Rishon Sha'al Ha'esh. So that was level number two. We have cleaning in cold water, if it's only ever used in cold, cleaning with cold water, and then you're fine. Second level was Hag'Allah, so you have four different levels. The third level is Libud, anything which is used directly with fire. Example, what kind of kalim are used directly with fire? What? Pots always have water inside, generally have water inside, so that's going to be considered in Libud. Okay, so pans that come into an oven are directly hitting fire, what else? You grill masters or you grillers?
Grill.
Okay, so we have basically everything on a grill. The utensils that are used for a grill, like the pointy fork thing, two-pronged fork, that's gonna need, even if it gets trace, the rack, the grill rack.
That's gonna be an issue with that just on barbecue. I think it's a two-pronged fork, which I know you know.
So kashering that way, you're going, I'm assuming it's the same as an oven. We talk about that type of thing for an oven, which is, actually ovens are interesting. Generally, the inside, sometimes, you can see what the inside of your oven is made of, sometimes it's ceramic, and we usually say, we're getting there, that ceramic cannot be kashered. So how can you kasher oven? We'll talk about that in a minute. But grills, you don't have that problem. The rack, the top of the grill is usually straight metal. So I guess you should be able to clean it very, very well and just turn it up to very high heat for a long time. Some of that would work. Definitely if you never actually trace it up and just trying to go, yeah,
for sure. I think I was posting a pizza flight, but for a grill. Because it doesn't cook hummus, I mean,
unless
you put it
in your
mouth.
Yeah, exactly.
But if it's meat, I would change it into hummus.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so then anything you use the fire, pass the fire, we would. Interesting to point out, important to point out, that Hagalah and Libun actually accomplish two different things. What did we say Hagalah does? Right, Hagalah pulls the taste out of the kli. What does Libun do? Libun doesn't pull taste out, it destroys it. You're burning it up, you're not just removing it, you're destroying it. So that is going to have important afternoon for halacha. But in just right now we know that there are three basic levels. Generally, what you're going to be dealing with is Haggalah. Once in a while, you'll get a food that needs Libun. Most of the time, Kalim, which gets scraped up, happens to be needing Libun. That's the more relevant one. Sorry, we are going to need Haggalah. That's the more relevant one. Okay, which Kalim can be kashered, need to be kashered? Is there anything that never needs to be kashered? Interesting question. So, the material which is spoken about directly in the Chumash, we said, was metal, right? Six different types of metal. Same spoken that discussed last week, Aseh and Matos. So, metal, midaraisa, needs kasher. It absorbs taste, and therefore, you're going to need to get that taste out. Cheret, pottery, parshat sav, in the context of korbanos, says that you actually cannot kasher pottery, you cannot kasher charet. If you use charet for korbanos, the tam that's absorbed inside is going to become nosar. After however long, whichever korban you're dealing with, after a certain amount of time, the taste which is absorbed becomes usar. And therefore, Torah says you need to break it, you need to smash the kli. That tells us that you cannot actually kasher charet. The only option is to break it, not the biggest expense. Charet is just like clay from the ground, pretty easy to make, very, very cheap, not the biggest problem. And apparently, from what I've heard, you can check this with Barnett Sullivan, but one of the things that we keep finding in areas where, I think in Shiloh, so all over the place, if you just take a walk around Shiloh, where the Mishkan was for a solid amount of time, there are just broken shards of pottery. And the basis of the halacha makes a lot of sense. People would cook it in their cheres pot, and then once they were done with it, they had no use for it. They would smash it on the ground. I guess they didn't have recycling back then. So cheres, parshas sot, just break it. Then other materials, let's say wood, the Gemara and Safin talks about, wood can be kashered like metal. A very interesting one is stone. There's a three-way machlokes about stone. In general, we know that stone is very bovea, it definitely absorbs tam, almost to the extent of cheres. So you'd assume that this is shitas or haigon, you would assume that it cannot be kashered the same way cheres cannot be kashered. The same way cheres is so absorbent, we assume that you can't actually get the taste out through haggalah. It should be the same thing with stone, that was your haigon. The Rif and the Rambam, and actually most Rishonim, say that it has the same status as wood and metal, that you in the Chabad Pasim, this way you can kasher with haggalah, no problem. Basically, all other materials, if it's not explicitly said that it cannot be kashered, we assume it can be kashered. There's one shocking shita by the Re-Sin-Ponti. You've never heard of him, that's great, neither have I. The Re-Sin-Ponti holds that it's mutter even without kashering. So you can have a stone flea used with pork, I guess wait 24 hours, and buy it from a guy. You don't need to kasher it, clean it out, and it's totally fine. How could that be? Great question. We're not going to get into it. There is a relatively complicated svara. When you get into Yarday, you can learn the shita. You can learn the svara behind the Reese's Bonzi. But it's based on possibility, potential possibility, that Hesher Kalim is actually a Zeras HaKasuv rather than a practical way to get taste out of a flea. Right? Everybody who comes into Hesher Kalim is assuming there's this taste, which we say is absorbed in the flea. I want to get it out before I use the flea. So here are the three ways to get the taste out of flea, to destroy the taste, whatever it is. It's possible that it's not the way we're meant to see Hesher Kalim. That is a practical element that we need to deal with, but the mitzvah of Hesher Kalim itself is just the Xeris HaKasuv, and therefore it's limited to the things which are included in the Xerah or were included by Chazal. Stone, which was never spoken about, stone, which was never explicitly included, would therefore just never, the chiyuv would never start. We don't pass it that way. We assume that stone can be kosher, needs to be kosher, but also can be kosher like most other materials. Good. An important question is plastic. A lot of kalim nowadays are made from plastic, so this is something which actually changed over time. There's an important rule that we need to know from kashering pottery. We already said that pottery cannot be kashered. That was true for Haggalah. By Haggalah, we assume that pottery is so bolea, it absorbs taste in such a strong way that you're never going to be able to get all the taste out. There are some times where we say that kashering three times works, but you can see why that would be a little bit better. But generally, we don't say that. That you're not going to be able to pull all the taste out of the flea, and therefore, haggalah does not work. But what about libum? Maybe I should be able to take my blowtorch and blowtorch this kli charet, and I'm not pulling anything out. I'm just destroying the taste exactly where it is inside the kli. So actually, technically, that should work. Technically, that you would be able to do that. You would be able to do melabing a kli charet. However, we are very concerned that at the same time you're burning the taste, you're also very likely destroying the kli. breaking it, burning it, it's not going to be usable, or there's a chance you're not going to be, it's not going to be usable by the time you're finished doing your leaving process. So, Chazal, we're afraid that instead of you fully being malami, fully burning out this kli, you're going to lower the temperature a little bit, you'll just throw it in for a few minutes and take it out. You're not going to give the full amount of time that it needs to actually burn out all the taste. So Chazal said, because of that concern, Dilma Chayes Ale, because of that concern, we're not going to allow libun for kli teresh, because we don't think you're going to do a full job. We don't think you're going to do a good job. This is extended not only by libun, but even to Chazalah, a material like ivory. Anybody know what ivory is? Elephant tusks. Classic source of ivory is elephant tusks. You kill huge elephants and just cut off their tusks. It's a horrible thing. And you get this very, very fancy, very rare, therefore expensive material to make stuff with. So you can make kalim out of ivory. Problem is, if you put them in boiling water, there's a very strong, it's a very delicate material. There's a pretty strong chance that it's going to either melt away or break in some way. So the same way you can do libun on clay chayres, you also can kasher ivory with water in Haggadah. Basically, we see that as a general klal, any time we're afraid the material is going to break down through your method of kashering, and we're afraid you're not going to do a good job because of that, we just knock out that as an option for the hesher. So, how does that apply to plastic? The same svara was applied, it used to be applied, to the Iter Haggadah of plastic. It used to be that the plastic was not made as well as it was now, and there's a strong chance the plastic would not be able to withstand the heat. So you take your, what's a good plastic leaf? Tupper.
A Tupperware? Yeah.
What's a Tupper? A tupper. Yeah. Oh, you call it a Tupper. I've never heard that before. You take a Tupper and you it's usually used with hot meat, and you accidentally used it within the same day for hot dairy, and now you want to kosher it so you can go back to using it with your meat. So what do? You take it, you dunk it in your boiling pot of water. What's going to happen to it? Is it going to break down, or is it going to be able to withstand the boiling water? So kalim nowadays, generally, I'm not dealing with the weak plastic like disposable Tupperware. So we're dealing with like a really strong gazunta Tupperware. That's going to be able to hold its form, no problem. Right? The production is so much stronger nowadays that there's generally no longer a chashash the plastic is going to break down. So you are allowed to kasher plastic kalim through Haggadah. Nowadays you can kasher plastic through
Haggadah.
No, correct. There are some people who still say no, but I think mainstream that you are able to kasher, at least hard plastic, you're able to kasher through Haggadah. Rav Moshe actually said kashering plastic did not work for a different reason. He wasn't concerned for the Dilma Chayes Svara. He held that it actually couldn't be kashered like glass. So some of that would not change, but I think mainstream shita is that plastic is kasherable. Oh, just to remind you, we also said that plastic did not, mainstream is that plastic does not need to be toppled. That was last week. Again, you have some people who disagree, maybe it's a nice mila, but in general we say the plastic does not need to be kosher. Okay, if you purposely use the food that absorbed the tray without hefshir, the food that was cooked is usher, both for you and for anybody you cook for. You use a similar type of knash for halacha Shabbos sometimes, even if the food did not technically absorb any tam. The reason for that iser is not because we're afraid there's tam iser absorbed into the kli, but rather basically as a knash, you did something wrong, purposely ignoring the mitzvah, purposely ignoring it, and therefore we have a knash, we apply a knash, and you're not allowed to eat the food, nor can anybody who the food is cooked for eat the food as well. So let's say you call up a rabbi and say, I have a hashakalim question. His first two questions are going to be, was it Ben Yomo? Why is he asking you about Ben Yomo? He needs to know what type of taste are we dealing with. Are we dealing with a taste, a tam mishubach, or a tam that's pagum, tam that's bad? If it's tam mishubach, there's a lot stronger of a chance that the food is going to be actual trafe, you're not going to be allowed to eat it. If it's in a ben yomo, things calm down a little bit. So if you say ben yomo, a lot of problems, it's going to ask you more, but there's a stronger chance it's going to end up with things trafe. Shishim is a question of time. If you say, no, it was not ben yomo, the last time it was used was a month and a half ago, he's next going to ask you, did you use it knowing I was supposed to do hesher? Or it was totally the show gig, it was totally a mistake. If you say, Rabbi, I'll be honest, I knew that I was supposed to be not sure the kli, and I just didn't have time, I just needed the kli, I needed the pot, and I used it, then presumably you're going to apply this knas. The food will be usher both for you and for anybody that you were cooking for. It's not worth it in the end. Just finding the pot bar from a neighbor, whatever it is. If you say, Rabbi, it was totally an accident, then a lot more room that that the food's going to be okay. Still need to hash, so you haven't solved that problem, but a lot more likely that the food's going to be okay. Good. So now you know, you want to make sure you know about the Taniyomo quality of the pot, and you need to know, am I using this Bishita Lahakas, or am I doing this as a Bishogi? Okay. The tefillah before Hesher question that we brought up, if I have this trace clue that I bought from a goy, I need to both do tefillah and do Hesher, which one, does one need to come before the other? So the Rosh says it doesn't really matter, tefillah before Hesher, Hesher before tefillah, it's fine. The Rashba says no, he used that line of Tobel v'Sherek v'Yado, and you should really be doing Hesher first, and then, only after you've been Mashir properly, then you should do the tefillah. The Mechaber actually passes that way, but he's not there for the Eved. If you did it the wrong way, he says it's okay. You don't really need to go back and do it again. But ideally, you should be doing it Hashir first, followed by tefillah. The Shach says you should tobel again without a bracha. The Shach is a little bit more machmir than the Mechaber. Halacha L'maaseh said you can rely on the Mechaber if the kli was Ein Ben Yomo. Right, so if the kli was Ein Ben Yomo, and then you did tefillah, and then you did hashir, and you realize, wait a minute, I did it in the wrong order. At that point, the Aruch Shulchan says that you can just keep things as they are. You don't even need to go. You don't need to go through the hassle of bringing it back to the mikvah. You're fine at that point. Okay, another interesting question. What about a kli that I bought from a guy, assuming that it's absorbed trace, but I'm only ever planning on using it with cold? What might that be? Cereal bowls. He probably used it for soup, clam chowder soup, and it's got some trachos absorbed into the thing. But for me, these are going to be my designated cereal bowl, cereal milk. I'm not even going to use it for oatmeal. There's no such thing as milk and soup, right? You never make, I guess, French onion and cheese. So there are some milk and soups. But these are not going to be my soup bowls. I already have my soup bowls. These are only my cereal bowls. Do I even need to do hefshir in the first place? Right, hefshir might only be an issue when I'm pulling, when there's a chance I'm going to be pulling the iser tam out of the kli. But I'm not planning on doing that. Why should I have to be mashir? This actually reminds us of what we spoke about before with the stone stuff. Is it a gzeres hakasuv or is it a practical din? If hefshir kalim is a gzeres hakasuv, then anytime you're buying kalim from a guy that there's a taste of iser absorbed inside, you need to go through the motion of hefshir kalim. That's the Gzeres HaKasuv. If it's a practical point, it's saying it should only apply if I'm planning on getting the taste out, meaning I'm planning on using it with hot. But in my case, if I'm planning on only using it with cold, you might think that it's not a problem. So, interesting question. Machlokes between the Shach, I think the Levush, and the Teferet, the Moshe. The Shach says that you do not need to be master in that case. Cool. Teferet, the Moshe disagrees. He says that you need half of it. Teferet, the Moshe may very well be coming from the place of stuffing, but if you're having a bunch of people over and you run out of soup bowls and you need to get two more bowls from somewhere, where are you going to be pulling those bowls from? Obviously you're going to be pulling out your cereal bowls, and if you bought them from a guy a year ago, you're not going to remember, I never did hefshir, I was only planning on using for cereal. You're going to use those bowls, and right there, you just use those trace kalim with hot, big problem. So the Rosh Moshe would tell you that you should be doing hefshir either way. Halacha L'maaseh, it's controversial, it's best really to be mashir before using it, even if you're only planning on using it with cold, but you do have what to rely on if you don't. I didn't get that sense, but I don't have anything to point to say if they say either way. There is something which shows up in other contexts. I'm applying it to this context, I don't think it shows up here. But I don't even know if that's relevant. There is a svara to say that if something is technically mutter and you're choosing to ignore it, it's also mostly it's almost the sense of being mostly laz al doros rishonim. We're saying like it's like ignoring chazal in a certain sense. The same way you can ignore chazal by being too mekel, you can also ignore chazal by being too machmir. So if you're saying I'm not going to use these bowls because like even though chazal says mutter, I'm going to be firmer than chazal and say that it's usher, that's probably not so great. You should probably push yourself to say like I'm following the rules of kashrus and I don't make up the rules of kashrus. Chazal do. That's probably a better perspective to have. If it's coming from a different place, then maybe. It's an interesting question. I'm going to answer for you. Okay. How does that then? We're going to go back to Haggalah. We said that what Haggalah essentially does, as opposed to Lilin, is that it pulls the taste out of the kli. Right? So where does that taste go? It goes into the water. So let's try to picture. We have a pot, a soup pot that I, not even a soup pot, let's say I have a soup pot that I bought from a guy. Tray, 100% tray inside, and we were assuming that there's paste inside the walls, and Malaman would say, like, coating the walls, whatever. And now I want to kosher this soup pot so I can use it for chicken soup on Shabbos. So I find a bigger pot, and I heat up the water, it's boiling, bubbles coming from the top. I take this 100% tray pot, and I dunk it in the bigger pot. Now the tray taste comes out of the pot and goes into the big pot, and what happens to the tray taste there? It's going to scrape up my bigger pot, and then it goes right back into the smaller pot and scrapes it up again. What have I gained by just making more things scrape? What is going on? How does Haggalah even work? That's a very important question. The question is a real one, and there are five different ways to get around it. There are one of five things, maybe more, that you would need to do to actually make sure that this is not a problem. Because essentially it is an issue, and if you somehow manage to miss each one of these, you will actually have scraped up both the bigger pot and the smaller pot, so you need to be aware of one of these five things. The number one, the best thing to do, is just always wait 24 hours before koshering any kli. If you walk out of this year, even this entire series, with just one piece of knowledge, not the whole series, there's a lot of stuff there. But if it's just like, from this year, you walk out with one thing, it's that I should only ever kosher a kli after waiting 24 hours. Why? What do you accomplish by waiting 24 hours? No same time is gone. Tam hagum. Any taste, any trace taste which is absorbed into the walls of the kli automatically becomes tam hagum. And when it goes out into the bigger pot, into the water, even if it does get absorbed into the bigger pot, even if it does get absorbed back into the smaller pot, it doesn't matter. The only thing that's going in is already negative tam, and therefore we can basically say we're going to ignore it. So always wait for any binyomo, always wait for 24 hours. That's the klal gedola of kashrut. You'll see when around Pesach time, people start putting up these huge boiling cauldrons of water for people who want to be mashed and pay them. And there are always signs right next to the big signs, big letters that say, Kalim must have been 24 hours without use before kashering, and the guys will ask you, was this kli used in the past 24 hours? That's a big deal. They're not only relying on people, Nehemiah's not only relying on people following this rule, that would be a little bit naive and silly, but that's one of the things they're trying to make sure all the kalim that are going into that pot of water are no same town in the gown. You'll also see if your parents are kashering the kitchen, for Pesach, one of the things they need to do is like block off the sinks or block off the countertops for a full 24 hours. It's the exact same reason. And before you're being mashed or anything, you want to make sure that you're dealing with town public, and in your home, so that you don't have, that's the easiest way to avoid this problem. Okay, strategy number two is bitul b'shishin. If you can ensure that the bigger pot that you're kashering in, it has 60 times the volume of whatever object you're kashering, then again, you're avoiding any problems. Whatever taste comes out is going to be bustled for the volume of the shishim, the 60 times, of the water itself. This sounds like it's doable. Let's say like you're kashering, you buy like silverware or something from a guy and you want to kasher all the silverware. It sounds like that should be a pretty reliable one. I get my biggest pot out and like one little spoon. You probably get shishim at that point. So that sounds good, but here you have a big problem. There's a cloud called Hoser Vineor. Have you ever heard of Hoser Vineor? Did you ever come up to me tomorrow? It's like a fulun den, fulun zachum and achos what?
I come back and wait.
Oh, great. Translate the word. So what is Hoser Vineor? So we know that we have this idea of bittul. It could come up in like trumos and nitrous stuff. We have this idea of bittul. I can have a small amount of taste, which is put into a larger mixture, and it's seen as basically insignificant. But let's say 5 minutes later, I pour in another small amount of the same thing. Let's say we're dealing with truma and fulun. So I put in a small squirt of truma, and it's insignificant, less than 1 per 100. The numbers for truma is a little bit different. It's bustle. Bittul is 1 in 100. So it's less than 1 in 100. It's 1 in 150. So it's bustle. And then I take another small squirt of the exact same truma and pour it into the pot again. How am I supposed to look at that mixture? Is it an insignificant small amount of truma plus a new small amount of truma, and I need to deal with both of them together? Or do I say, no, the way Bittul works is the first drop got totally absorbed into the overall mixture, and now this new drop of truma is the only truma in the entire pot. So which one do I look at? These are two shittos, obviously. Machlokas in the Gemara. So they give chozer v'neyor. If we're going to apply chozer v'neyor to our kashrut situation, essentially what's happening, I put in the first spoon. Every spoon you put in. So I put in the first spoon. It's like 1/1000th of the entire pot. But then I put in the second spoon. I said I put in the third spoon. If I'm kashruing 50 spoons, I'm kashruing 50 pieces of silverware, over time, if you say chozer v'neyor, the traceless content of that pot is of the water, it's going up and up and up and up. Eventually, you're going to get past shishim. You'll lose the bittul b'shishim, and then everything goes to pieces. The spoons are traced, the pot's traced, and everyone's upset. So, does this actually apply? It's discussed by the Shach. The Shach thinks that chozer v'neyor is going to be a problem, and we generally try to be machmir to that. Even though the Rambam didn't talk about it, you may have just been assuming it was obvious. It is a big discussion, but we generally try to be machmir to the shita of chozer v'neyor. Therefore, shishim is not, end of the day, it's not so reliable. If you only have one spoon to be machmir, fine, it's not the biggest deal, but it's not so great. So, Ein Binyamo is going to save you in that situation.
If you swap out the water, or just keep swapping out the water, does that make a difference?
Meaning you pour it all out?
You put in 10 spoons, and then you add some more, but before you just take out some water, which has bad taste in it, you're not changing other water.
You're going to be dealing with percentages, so you're going to have to...
And then you can just have to make 10 spoons.
Yeah, I guess so. If you could just dump it all out and start again, probably better. But theoretically, I think you're dealing with percentages there, so you just need to keep track of all the percentages. Okay, we have two suggestions so far. Nosen Thomas Gan, just wait 24 hours, and Shishim. Industrial kashrus often uses the following. Generally, the shas of the pack, if they can't wait 24 hours for some reason, like a company calls up the OU and says that we found that we accidentally used some trace ingredients, we have to do a big recall, but we can't wait 24 hours before you can come and kashrut all of our stuff. It's a full day's production. We're not interested in doing that. We lose millions of dollars. You guys have like 10 minutes to kashrut everything. So obviously they're going to say, okay. So here's what they'll do. They'll boil up their huge vat, massive, massive pot of boiling water, and they'll squirt in, they'll put in something which is never hakogein. They'll put in something which makes any taste which comes out automatically a negative, a tam kavum. You can use ash for that. Generally what's used is soap. Bleach might work, so don't like make your kalim toxic. The best move is to squirt in a whole lot of soap, and then any taste which comes out into the water, even though it's not in a binyomo, it's automatically becoming pugum as it comes into the water. So again, you're not going to have a problem of the bigger food's not going to be affected, the taste is not going to be able to go back into the smaller food, so everything would be okay. We don't love doing that though, because the heter of being pogim tam is never brought up in the context of Hesher Kalim. It is brought up in a different context. We spoke about it when we were talking about washing dishes, that it can avoid creating issues, but we never spoke about it as a Hesher, as like a backdoor move when it comes to Hesher Kalim. So we don't love using it, but the Shas of the Hak is something that we will use. Another, Tosos brings up the possibility of doing Hagalah twice, that you dunk something in the water, and if you're right, the trace taste did go back in, but again, only a percentage of the trace taste went back in. Let's say like 1/45th of the taste of the water went back into the clean. So whereas the clean used to be fully trace taste, now it's only 1/45th trace taste. And then I'll do another round of Hagalah after changing the water, and you're almost guaranteed to have bittul b'shishim there. It's an interesting suggestion. The problem is a different, more complicated aspect of basul chalav called chanan, which we're not going to get into. But that, again, that one's not so great. You really should avoid that. One more. If you're kashering heter, then you have not far not. And actually, you have three steps not far not. You have, well, this is a chamei thing, but you have chamei into the kli, into the water. So it's right there, 33 steps, it's not far not far not, but you said another context, it's a little bit more megel. But end of the day, we really are most comfortable if you just waited 24 hours. Alright, so anytime you're doing a special kalim, you find a spoon on the wrong side of the sink, whatever it is, wait 24 hours, that's your best bet, and then you're going to be okay, just do a stand regular hagalah. If only part of a cleat was used with trace, let's say that I know only the bottom half of my soup pot came in contact with trace. So what do we say? The number one is on the fire, and usually we say that heat causes, you can touch the top part of your pot, and you will feel that it's burning hot. It seems like the heat is causing, the heat is spreading throughout the entire pot. Maybe the taste went with it, so I should have to kosher the entire thing. On the other hand, maybe the taste stays where the taste is, where the actual liquid of the food is, and the heat is what spreads, but the taste does not go along with it. That's been my focus. Ashkenazim and Sephardim, ask your local Orthodox rabbi. One more din, Gagna Avram, is actually in our time, and as we mentioned before, says you should not kasher kelim back and forth. Why not? Very practical. It's confusing. How am I supposed to keep track? I had a blue sticker on, then a green sticker on, then a red sticker on, back and forth, keep changing the stickers. Terrible idea. The Chasam Sofer says if you had a reason to kasher it in the first place, then you're allowed to switch as well. It's a couple of things.
Yeah, but then you know too many guests. Then you do whatever for a dollar shop.
That's the thing?
Yeah, I don't know.
I wonder if that would qualify. You may have to go check with your neighbors first. You may have to go see if you can borrow a couple pots from your neighbors. That would be like the better option over switching over a pot.
Even though it's one time that's a better option.
Right. So this Chasam Sofer, I think, was saying if you wanted the kasher for Pesach, then at the same time, you can go for a kosher of meat, or meat to dairy. Or if something accidentally became trace, so you have to kosher it anyway, you can use that as like the reset button. So those are two examples of where you'd be allowed, once you're already koshering it, you can use that as an excuse to change over. Okay, so usually try to avoid. That is kosher kelim. Now obviously there's really a lot more to talk about. We didn't really touch on Liban at all. Knives have their own special thing, but at a certain point it becomes pretty complicated, so I think we're going to stop there. Glass, we didn't talk about glass. Oh man. Okay. Maybe I think one more shear. We'll finish up with some of the last details of Hefshir Kalim, including glassware. That's a big deal, but it's pretty short, not so much to talk about. And maybe the last thing should be like bugs. Let's see if we can do a little bit of bugs. Okay, just go ahead, guys.